When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. If you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store, whether you sell physical, digital, or service products. Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now, and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF, and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Wait in the house. There's a good boy for you.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. This is Josh. That's Chuck. This is Stuff You Should Know. How do you smell, Chuck?
I was out of deodorant this morning, so.
How are you holding up? Well, this is, we got a good 3.5 feet between us.
Yeah.
So plenty we're fine. This yeah. is fine. You heard, this is a non-usual opening for this podcast. You
yeah.
didn't hear, but.
Oh, I heard.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Earlier today, yeah.
Okay, so that's the last few seconds, I guess, of The Fly, the original 1958 version starring Vincent Price.
Yeah.
And that is the inventor named Seth Brendel, who...
Brendelfly.
Yeah, who has converted himself into a fly. Well, switched heads with the fly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Switched bodies, I guess. And now he's a tiny little fly man who's being attacked by a spider on the spider web.
You know, I just saw the Cronenberg version a couple of months ago. I think I told you that.
Yeah. It holds up
the first
good.
Time. Yeah.
Except I don't understand why what is his name? The main guy.
Goldblum.
I don't understand why Jeff Goldblum decided to add I guess a kind of like sexy arrogance to his character, cuz it came off weird.
Hey, that's just the Goldblum. That's he can do
I guess
nothing
so.
But.
I guess so, man.
The Hefe brings that to everything he does.
He's tripping with it. So, Chuck, we played that part of The Fly, not so much because we could, although that was a large part of it,
mm-hmm.
but because we can explain what is on that little fly body now.
That's right.
We've read How Flies Work, and specifically How House Flies Work, by Stuff to Blow Your Mind's Robert Lamb. Who's been popping up a lot lately, hasn't he?
Who, Robert's work?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
And he just kind of pops in to the cubicles and says, hey, how's it going? A lot lately.
And we go, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the housefly, Josh. If you live in a house and you've got flies flying around, you got about a 90% chance that that is an actual Musca domestica.
Yeah.
The common housefly.
That's the housefly's name.
That's right.
There's not some other more exotic name.
No.
It is... On all initial appearances, one of the more mundane bugs ever. But it's actually pretty interesting, if you ask me.
And disgusting, because they carry lots of diseases, like typhoid fever and salmonella and leprosy and cholera.
Isn't that crazy they carry leprosy?
Intestinal worms.
Well, I knew that.
Bacteria that can lead to dysentery.
I didn't know that they could carry leprosy, though.
I didn't either.
You know, I always equate leprosy with nudism. Because they both live in colonies.
Really?
Yeah.
I always think of leprosy, when I think of leprosy, I think of the Bible, because growing up in church, that's where I heard about leper colonies and leprosy.
Sure, yeah, and lepers being healed and all that.
Exactly.
Have you ever seen The Fog? The second one, I guess?
No.
Oh.
Or The Fog 2?
Was there a Fog 2?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, John Carpenter did the original Fog, I think.
Right. This is the remake.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Where the people attacking were lepers who were turned away, and now their ghosts have come back for vengeance.
I think that was the original as well.
Oh, was it? I didn't realize they were lepers. I thought they were like pirates that had been double-crossed or something.
Jeez, we need to get our act together.
I know. That's such a good movie. The first one.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I just watched The Thing last night.
Oh, that's a great one, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I had a fairly voracious Alien versus The Thing comments on Facebook.
I saw.
People get into that.
I definitely say Alien is badder, but The Thing is more disgusting.
A little more twisted.
Yeah.
All right. This has been a long setup.
Flies, huh?
Yeah.
So, Chuck, we've got down that they spread disease, right?
Potentially.
One of the things that kind of cropped up while I was reading this is it was kind of an expansion of everything I'd always knew about flies.
Yeah, we all know a little bit.
Which I find very reassuring. You know, it's not like quantum suicide where it's like everything you think you know is just completely unreal
right.
And just go ahead and stop thinking now. This is like, yes, you understand houseflies. And here is some more information about them. So I guess kind of this is almost like an elementary school episode, which I find I find comforting and reassuring.
I like it too.
Let's talk about fly anatomy, housefly anatomy. And if I accidentally say fly, if you accidentally say fly, we mean housefly specifically, right?
That's right. Oh, and dispersed throughout the podcast, we will have fly facts
that sound like this.
So when you hear that, it's going to be a new fly fact. So Josh, if you're talking a housefly body, it's like a lot of insects. It's got an exoskeleton made of chitin. And it's got three sections to the body. You got the head.
Right.
You got the thorax. You got the abdomen.
Right.
And as everyone knows, this actually isn't a fly fact, so no buzz, but, it is a fact, but it's not one of our fly facts.
So no jingle.
No jingle. Everyone knows that the fly has all those tiny little bitty eyes. And like you said, it's reassuring to know that's exactly what they are. They're, two common eyes divided up into 3,000 to 6,000 simple eyes.
Yes.
And it's like a bunch of little video monitors because they can't focus on one little thing in particular.
Right.
It's like a mosaic.
Right. But I also got the impression that it's like a mosaic, but each little eye is kind of its own. It's representative of the physical grid. It makes a grid of its physical environment, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder if the fly's like, oh, there's a movement in sector 90,000.
That's what I wonder. And like I go focus on that one simple eye. To see that, you know, piece of poo on the ground that I need to go, you know, waddle through.
Or there's a human who's coming toward me or something. And, of course, by sector 90,000G, I meant sector 3,000 to 6,000G.
Right, yeah. So those are the eyes. And there are also a couple of little, I think three, ocelli's.
Or if you're in Italy, ocelli.
Ocelli. And they are between the two compound eyes, and that's sort of like a compass that keep the fly oriented and ideally flying toward the sun.
Okay, so I think that this should be the first fly fact.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, Chuck, the reason houseflies are commonly found kind of flittering against a window...
Because they're stupid.
No,
oh.
That's a fly myth.
Okay.
The fly fact... is that their ocelli, the two simple eyes that act as the compass, orient themselves upward by finding the sunlight. They're all constantly searching for sunlight, which is why they always go to a window.
Or a bug zapper.
That was fly fact number one.
All right, I like it. On the head, Josh, which is where a lot of the action takes place with a fly, they get their sense of smell from their antennae right there. For tasting and eating, they have a proboscis, which is a little plunger-like thing that sticks out from the bottom of its mouth.
Yeah.
And, I'm sorry, the bottom of the head. They have little feelers, two of these, and they are maxillary palps. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then they are the tasters, and at the end of the proboscis, you have the labellum, which is that the mouth? The little spongy part?
Yeah. It's like a sponge mouth. Like, it's not like an open mouth that you think of. It's like a sponge on the end of the proboscis.
Okay.
Where you just suck.
I said proboscis, didn't I?
It's close.
It's proboscis.
It's all right.
Sorry about that.
No, it goes either way.
And that always makes me think of Adaptation. Chris Cooper's character talks about the proboscis of the orchid.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry's in there just saying yes. Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. Apparently, she's guest starring in this episode.
She's paying attention for the first time in weeks.
So, Chuck, there's a huge, huge little thing that you pointed out that the labellum,
yes,
the spongy mouth,
uh-huh,
doesn't allow solid food in. And we're going to get to that in a minute, but just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
That's fly foreshadowing, not a fly fact. But we've come to what I think is fly fact number two, don't you?
Are you going with the biting?
Yeah, the biting.
Okay, fly fact number two. Houseflies do not bite. If you get bitten by a fly...
It was not a housefly.
Not a housefly. It might be a horsefly. And you know those in the summertime when you're in the pool, they'll land on your head and bite the tar out of you.
Or it might have been your little sibling, brother or sister.
That's true. And what other... did they list another one? Stable flies.
Which are... Yeah.
Horseflies.
They kind of take care of all the horses at once, where a horse fly is just like, I just want this one horse.
Right.
That's my take on it.
All right, so that's fly fact two.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Oh, hi. I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Chuck, we are on to wings now, which isn't necessarily a fly fact because it's so essential, right? Back in ancient times, which was up to 65 million years ago, as I understand.
Okay.
That's how long houseflies have been around. Okay?
Uh-huh.
They had two full sets of wings. And nowadays, in our modern times, it looks like houseflies have one set. That's not necessarily true.
Yeah, if you're a little jerky kid, a little myoclonic jerk, and you pull the wings off of a fly, you probably think you're just pulling off two.
Yeah.
And you may be, because those are the large ones. But there's little tiny guys under there.
They're called halters, right?
Yeah.
And the halters were actually, if you pull the halter off, these little tiny wings that are underneath or above.
I think they're underneath.
They're underneath the big wings. They basically allow the fly to move quickly in the air, right?
Yes.
To maintain balance,
mm-hmm,
a direct direction.
Yeah, hover.
Yes. And so if you remove one of these, it can only go in circles. If you remove both of the halters, the fly isn't airborne at all.
Yeah, with those two big wings, it still can't fly.
Yeah.
Without its little halters.
Yep.
It's pretty good, but not a fly fact.
No.
very interesting nonetheless.
But the big wings, the large wings that you see when you look at a fly, are the ones that do the real heavy lifting, right?
Yeah, we're talking 200 to 300 flaps per second, and they can go about 4.5 miles an hour.
Which I would have assumed they could go faster than that.
Yeah, me too.
I can run 4.5 miles an hour, and it's...
And I've seen flies zipping by me when I'm running.
Yeah. So, Chuck, first, I don't know if you said the all of the moving parts, the wings, the legs, all this stuff, are located in the thorax, right?
Yes.
So you've got the two sets of wings up top, and then below that, you have the different legs. And the legs are, well, they're standard legs. They're segmented and jointed.
Mm-hmm.
But the most interesting part for me about the fly legs, the house fly legs, are the tarsi, right?
Yes.
Which are little tiny hairs on the end of the legs that act as pretty much the same thing as taste buds do for us. So that's why a fly, that's why it'll land on food. It's not just landing.
No,
It's tasting to say, do I want some of this?
Yeah.
And most of the time the answer is yes.
Yes, and we'll get to the gruesome truth of that in a moment as well.
Right.
My favorite part of the legs is the pulvilli.
Yes.
And they are little moist suction pads, and they are the little grippers. So that's why when you see a fly jump on a wall, fly into a wall, and just all of a sudden they're like Spider-Man.
Right.
Walking up the wall.
Right.
Little grippers.
Or that's how Jeff Goldblum did it.
With some joie de vivre as well.
Right.
Thrown in there. And then the abdomen, they have the key organs, which are the reproductive organs in the female, the oviposter. And the male has the ediagus. And I actually looked that one up.
Nice.
And that's not how I would have pronounced it. But these little little things retract when they're not in use on both the male and the female. So they stay protected there.
It's very aerodynamic.
Yes.
It would be very un-aerodynamic to have the ediagus just kind of flapping in the wind as
that's
the flies zipping around the house.
Yeah, it's like putting the landing gear down a little too soon.
Right, exactly. So, Chuck... We already foreshadowed what's going on with the mouth, the
yeah.
sponge mouth,
mm-hmm.
the labellum. Right?
Yes.
That it can only accept liquids. Well, not everything a fly eats is liquid, right?
No, not if they want to chomp on that steak or that dog crap.
Or dry blood.
Yeah.
When a fly encounters something, well, first of all, when it accepts food into the labellum, it basically sucks it straight into the stomach.
Yeah, if it's liquid, it's good to go.
So when it lands on the food and it finds that it can't just suck it up, it basically tries to crumble it with the end of its proboscis, right?
Yeah.
At that point, it's got tiny little, it's smaller, it's more manageable.
Sure.
And then it pukes on it.
Yep.
That's step two. Everything you've ever heard about flies vomiting on you or your food or whatever when they land is absolutely true.
Yeah, I might have thought that was an old wives' tale in this article.
No, it is true. What the fly does is basically spit up saliva and digestive juices onto the little crumbs that it's made using its proboscis,
uh-huh.
right? And it sits there for a couple of seconds and it's thinking, and then it tries to slurp it up.
Yeah.
And Robert makes a really good point in the article. This sounds extremely disgusting to us, right?
Yeah, sure.
But the fly isn't doing anything we don't do.
Right.
When we take food into our mouth, we chew it, we masticate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Saliva is attacking it, starting to break it down, and then it goes through our esophagus into our stomachs, and it becomes digested by juices. The fly is just doing the same thing, but on the outside of its body.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have teeth and jaws.
We have the decency to keep it all internal. So
right.
We don't go into restaurants and puke up onto our plate.
Yeah.
That'd be untoward.
So if this food is kind of in an in-between state, and it's been spit on and vomited on and left, and it's still not quite right.
Yeah.
It gets moved to the crop, right?
Yeah, should we call this fly fact?
Oh, sure.
Okay, fly fact, what is this, 3?
Yeah.
There's a crop, like you said, and instead of just saying, oh, well, this little bit of crumb isn't quite liquid enough, let me just go fly to another one, the fly is pretty efficient, so they say, actually, let me save this for later, stick it down another hole into the crop, and in the crop it waits. And then they'll pass it back and forth, maybe add a little more digestive juices, throw up on it a bit more. And they do this until it's ready to be, you know, until it's liquid, ready to go down the chute.
Yeah. It doesn't waste its food.
No.
No. That was Fly Fact 3, right?
Yes.
There is one thing, you know, we said that the fly is not really doing anything differently than we do to our food. It's just doing it on the outside.
Yeah.
That's still horrific and disgusting because not only is the fly carrying possibly leprosy to your sandwich, when it throws up on it,
yeah,
it's probably throwing up something it just ate, which, as you pointed out, could be dog poop.
Yep.
Could be blood.
Yeah.
Could be the, you know, poop from a leprous dog.
Uh-huh.
Something like that.
Yeah, so when you're at a picnic or something and you see that fly on your Sammy, it's probably, and if you see it moving his little hands around, mm-hmm. it's vomiting disease on your food is what it's doing.
Right, exactly.
Potentially disease. Not always.
No, and plus, you don't underestimate the human immune system. I mean, we all have white blood cells, you know. We all can mount a pretty decent defense unless we have some sort of immunodeficiency. And if we do have that, then we're probably in some sort of treatment for it. So, for the most part, I mean, it is gross, but, you know, I think in modern times, we got the flies under control, at least, you know, here in the West.
Yes.
For now, until the apocalypse comes.
The rise of the flies.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember that part in Amityville Horror where the priest is like, he's covered in flies and starts sweating? And
very creepy.
Who was that, Rod Steiger?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Get out.
I would have been so out of there.
Chuck.
Yes.
We talked about their sexy bits already.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do with them? What's the fly family like?
A fly family, Josh, is like many insect families. They male will chase down a female and impregnate her. And it happens really quick. She's ready to lay her eggs, toot sweet, and they don't stick together after they mate. They separate, and the mother doesn't even guard the eggs like a lot of species do.
One night love affair.
Yeah, and she basically dumps the eggs in what she deems to be a safe place, and she's like, I'm out of here.
It's a one night stand followed in child abandonment.
And how many eggs does it lay at a time? Did we get that?
Up to 900 over the life cycle of a fly.
Okay, in a life cycle, I think they said the average lifespan is about 3 weeks, but it could be 3 months.
Yeah, I don't think a fly can live physically beyond 3 months, but yeah, the average lifespan in reality, because of fly swatters and things like that,
right,
is like 21 days, I think you said.
Yeah. So the life cycle is a lot like most insects. It's got the egg and then the larva, then the pupa, then the adult. Warm summertime is optimal. It takes about 7 to 10 days. To go from egg to adult, and they go through, I think, 3 molting stages, the little maggots do, don't they?
Mm-hmm. See, you know this. You know all this. You learned this in school. Isn't it nice to know this?
Yeah, it is. Very nice.
So, Chuck, with the maggots, the first stage, the most interesting stage, we've arrived at a story that I have.
Oh, boy.
When I was in college, cooked steak, I threw cooked steak. And really, actually, now that I think about it, I guess I probably trimmed some raw meat off.
Okay.
And put it in the garbage can, as is normal. A garbage bag in a garbage can, the kitchen garbage can.
Okay.
And I get up the next, so I'm a normal person.
You're
I'm not like
regular,
some freak, right?
I throw a steak away.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I get up the next morning and I go into the kitchen and I wonder, why is the kitchen floor moving like that?
Oh, man.
And I kind of followed the floor as it went up the garbage can and mm-hmm. into it. And I realized that my kitchen floor, it's a small kitchen, granted, but my kitchen floor was covered in a living layer of maggots.
The whole thing?
The whole thing.
Wow.
So I'm like, I've got to get rid of these. What? How do you take care of a maggot infestation?
Holy cow.
And I tried bleach
mm-hmm.
first. Did nothing to them.
What?
Didn't even slow down one of them.
Really?
I ended up having to walk all over them.
Well, that's the old-fashioned way.
That's what I had to do. And I did not actually have a fly infestation after that, so I guess I got them all. But they make a horrific little popping sound.
Did you have like snowshoes or something at least?
No, probably like hiking boots or something. Like
right.
That. Oh, it was in Athens.
Why were they all over the floor? Was it from the steak in the garbage can?
They came out of the garbage can.
Overnight?
Yeah. Like,
wow.
Like that.
That's frightening.
But that, I mean, that follows with what we know about the housefly life cycle, that larvae hatch within a day.
Right.
And don't forget larva, and by larvas I meant larva with an E on the end, equals maggots. Right?
They breathe out of their butt, right? Didn't we learn that somewhere else?
Yeah.
So they never have to stop eating?
Exactly. So they're just like this little fleshy worm-like thing with a hooked mouth that just does nothing but eat.
And poop.
Yeah, because they breathe out of their butts.
And molt, like I said, three stages. And in the third molting stage, you know, it goes, it gets a little darker and enters the pupa stage. And that's the larger protective shell. Then it fully develops and out comes a beautiful butterfly. Or a disgusting housefly.
Yeah. Like Bart in The Simpsons.
Yeah, and how to, like what?
Bart in The Simpsons, there's a treehouse of horror where they redid the fly.
Oh, yeah, that's
remember?
Right.
He's like that mindless, like the fly with Bart's body is this mindless eating machine.
Yeah, that was one of the earlier ones. That was a good one.
Yeah.
And then they get out of their little shell there with a temporary swollen bump because they can't chew to get out of an egg or the shell. So they literally use this bump on their head to crack their way out. And then after they get out, that bump deflates and it just becomes part of the head again.
I wonder if it's unique to each fly, like they can recognize one another
from the bump.
By the bump on the head. Like
I don't know, and I didn't. There wasn't a name for that in here either.
No, it's just a swollen bump.
All right, fly fact number four.
Yes, so we talked about a fly. It can't live longer than 3 months.
That's right.
That is if it's existing outside of diapause, right?
Totally fascinating to me.
Yes, so diapause is basically like suspended animation or hibernation for a fly. Basically, if there's no food around and there's no predators either, and the fly's like, I'm going to see what's going on a few months from now, the fly can basically shut down its life processes to this state where it can just exist without moving. It's like a state between life and death for a few months, right?
Yeah.
And then wake back up and be like, it's the future.
Or it's winter, and I'm dead soon.
That's another part.
Because don't they only live during the warmer months, or do they don't live all year round, do they?
They thrive in
warmer,
okay. Warm, muggy areas.
So, Josh, surely these things add nothing to the world aside from being disgusting little creeps.
Agreed.
Not true. You don't want them in your house.
Well, remember, Chuck, these are one of three bugs that you and I agreed are fine to kill.
Yeah. What else did we say?
Ticks.
Mosquitoes.
And mosquitoes.
Ticks. And this is the only non-bloodsucker.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's a poop eater, though. And that's why you don't want it in your house. But they are good, like all flies in the world at large. Great source of protein. They break things down into smaller bits for other bacteria and life forms to feed on.
Right. They are an important part of any ecosystem that they live in. I mean, there's nothing here that's useless, right?
That's right.
Okay.
I think they even found a use for the old appendix, didn't they?
They did. Doesn't it, like, combat cancerous growth?
I can't remember.
I believe so.
And I think they even use maggots in freshwater fishing, raising commercial fish.
Like tilapia?
Yeah.
Tilapia, love them. They use pupa. The pupa is high in protein.
Oh, okay. So that's what they feed them, little freeze-dried pupa?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're a survivalist or you're in a bad situation out in the woods and you need to survive, maggots, if you get like a rotted tree on the ground, you want to eat those maggots.
You'll eat it. You'll eat it and you'll like it.
I would do it. And I'm not down with that stuff at all, but I would do that, of course, to save myself.
Full circle entomophagy.
Oh, yeah?
Nice job, Chuck.
Thank you. Do we have time for one more fly fact?
I think so. I think, yes, we do.
All right, fly fact number six?
No, five.
Five. Ancient civilizations actually made regular sacrifices to the fly gods to keep the swarms out of their houses.
And temples.
Because they thought they were harbingers of sickness and death, even though they didn't know the science behind it.
Right. Flies are just, there's something about them.
Yeah.
They are, they're disgusting. They're unwholesome. That's the word I'm looking for. They are inherently unwholesome.
Yeah.
So if you want to keep flies out of your temple, right, you have several options available to you, right?
Yeah. Keep a clean house.
That's number one. That's the smartest thing to do. Don't don't leave like your carton of milk open and just sitting on the counter when you're doing shots of it, right?
Yeah.
Or the steak in the trash.
Yeah, Emily makes me throw away food. I put it in a bag and take it out to the garbage now.
That's what we do, too.
That's what you do as adults in college, though.
I think so, yeah.
It's like scraping the trash.
It was in a kitchen garbage can with a top.
I mean, in college, I would have left that plate out in the living room on the couch.
I've always been fairly clean.
Yeah, me too.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What else can you do?
That didn't sound fairly clean.
Biological control. You got the old Venus flytrap, which, you know, if you can keep them healthy, they're kind
of
tough.
Not just that. At the end of the, fly that was at the beginning of this podcast,
right,
he's caught in a spider web, which happens quite a bit. So, as long as the spider's not going to kill you and your family while you're sleeping, just leave it alone, because it's going to control the fly population tremendously.
That's right. And farmers, even, there's some commercial farms that actually buy parasitic wasps to, you know, eat larvae,
right,
and take care of flies for their crops.
The Pteromelidae wasp.
That's right.
Pteromelidae.
Keep your windows and doors shut. That's kind of obvious. If you're going to keep your door open in the middle of summertime, you're going to have a lot of flies.
I think that's funny that that even warranted its own bullet point.
Yeah. And the fly swatter did too, actually. Physical control.
Yeah.
And fly paper, which is disgusting.
Yeah, it's gross too. I mean, especially around food. Like if you see that in the kitchen at camp.
Yeah.
You know, when you went to camp.
Oh, yeah.
And you walk past the kitchen, there are like flies there. It's like, get some glass. Glaze these windows. What is wrong
right.
with you?
Or at least change the fly paper every day.
That's something, too.
There's bug zappers, and then I wouldn't even endorse pesticides for houseflies. You don't want to be spraying that stuff in your house, but that is an option for some people. Yeah. It's just not for me. They can be very dangerous.
And as anybody who's ever seen A Bug's Life knows, the bug zappers actually get bugs high. It's kind of like a hallucinogen to them.
Oh, is that what happened in that? I don't remember that.
I remember the guy that got zapped, the bug got zapped. He's like, oh, that was far out.
Really?
Something along those lines.
Yeah, bug zappers are fun.
So, Chuck, you got any more fly facts or anything?
No.
No?
Nope.
So we're done with houseflies?
I'm done.
Forever.
Yep.
Houseflies, just as disgusting as you always thought.
That's right.
And you already knew everything about them. So, everybody, give yourself a pat on the back for this one, right?
Yeah, and you know, we should mention, if you use a fly swatter, it's a lot of fun to smash a housefly, but you leave behind quite a disgusting mess.
Yeah. Yumi will not allow house or fly swatters in the house.
No, we don't. We haven't owned it. They're really kind of gross. We haven't owned one.
Really,
that's
are.
Only second to the pooper scooper for the kitty litter as far as disgusting devices in the house.
Or the toilet scrubber next to the toilet.
Yeah, or the plunger.
Yeah. So that's it. Now you know what chucks in my houses look like.
Yes.
Right? If you want to know more about flies and you want to see these fly facts in text even, you can type in house flies in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com, which of course brings up listener mail.
Funny or sad?
Funny.
Okay. I'm going to read the Hodgman Exchange.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was thinking we wouldn't do that and end up on Judge John Hodgman. Like maybe he'll litigate us if we just pretend like he doesn't exist.
We'll see. I'm going to read this, though. Our buddy Johnny Rocket Hodgman. John Kellogg Hodgman.
Rocket is his maiden name.
He has a podcast he does through Jesse Thorne's Maximum Fun Sound of Young America called Judge John Hodgman. We've plugged it before.
Yeah.
He settles minor disputes between friends, lovers, husbands and wives.
Yes.
And it's very fun. So John writes this last week, and there is a fan that said, I wish to file suit against the Stuff You Should Know podcast. And this guy is complaining about the fact that we said in the Scooby-Doo show that there were the Boston area campuses.
Yeah, the five colleges that were represented by the characters, supposedly. It was one of the Scooby-Doo myths, and we said that they're all Boston area colleges. Like, what ones?
Amherst,
UMass, Holyoke,
yeah,
Mount Holyoke,
Northampton, and all right, that's the ones we'll get to. So, March 18th, 8:39 a.m. Judge John Hodgman writes to Stuff You Should Know. Seriously, guys, see this below. The five colleges are in the Connecticut River or Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts, specifically Amherst, Northampton, and Holyoke, Massachusetts. This is painful to me, not only because this is Hodgman country, but it was, which is manlier than Marble country, actually.
Yeah. It also has more Argyle.
That's right. It was indeed while driving up and down the tobacco fields along the Connecticut River that I first came to enjoy your podcast and to admire your great knowledgeability. Wait, you say, tobacco fields? That is right. The Connecticut River Valley produces what is historically the most prized shade tobacco in the United States. Massachusetts tobacco is still dried and used as wrappers for fine cigars. Hmm. Were you aware of this? In all caps.
Yeah, he loves all caps, doesn't he?
He's very intimidating. Someday I even hope to show this fine country to you, my semi-hometown in my total home state, and to remind you of the great motto of Hampshire College, to know is not enough. I look forward to hearing this letter read in its entirety on your podcast before you force me to humiliate you on mine. That is all. At 9:57, Chuck Bryant writes back, Boy, John, did we hear about this one. It made it abundantly clear that the fine people of Massachusetts need to get right with one another and cease to throw up walls between themselves. There is enough segregation in the world. At 10:04, Judge John Hodgman writes, So you have already run a correction then. I must have missed it. That was sarcasm. At 10:06, Chuck writes, We have not and shall not take part in the continued segregation of the fine people of Massachusetts. That is all. At 10:08, John writes, You leave me no choice but to mention this on my own podcast.
Oh, good.
And I respond to him, And you leave me no choice but to scoff at it publicly on our podcast. This is like a nerd battle at this point.
Yeah.
And then John writes, very seriously, You don't want to go down this road, Chuck. Just read my letter on the air before this gets ugly. I finally responded, If anything gets read, shall be the entire exchange, John, complete with your threatening words from the alleged judge. And then he writes back, finally, You are a monster. And that is the end of the exchange.
That was a great dramatic reading, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, John.
Beep.
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 And sorry, I guess, to everybody who was offended by that, which was a substantial amount of people who wrote in.
I guess in Massachusetts, that'd be like saying, equating Macon with Atlanta or something. And we would say, no. Macon's not even close to Atlanta.
Yeah, but I don't know if I would point out the difference angrily.
Well, plus they were disassociating from Boston. Usually you glom on to the big city, and they were like, no, we're not Boston.
Yeah. This one, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't either. But to each his own, as we always say, right?
That's right.
If you want to litigate us somehow via email, maybe, you can contact John Hodgman. We should probably give his personal email out, huh?
Yeah. since he was so kind to Coffee Hours.
Yeah. Well, you can contact us first, and we'll see if we can put you in touch with John. You can reach us via Facebook at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. You can tweet to us at SYSKpodcast, right? And then you can always send us a good old-fashioned email, which we're always appreciative of, although no longer respond to every single one, be aware. That's stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.